Good afternoon, and welcome to U-Talk here on 101.5 FM on UMFM. We connect with amazing people from across Canada and ask them about their stories, passions, and experiences. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. Today, we'll learn about a fantastic film made by amazing people from Share Films, Emergence Out of the Shadows. We'll also hear stories from people participating in Ethnofest 2021.
Namaste everyone, my name is Lakshika, and a little bit about myself. I was born in New Delhi, India, and I moved to Canada with my family in 2014 when I was 14. Right now I'm doing Women's and Gender Studies from University of Winnipeg, and I plan to be a lawyer. Today I will be taking you through three of the Indian cultural symbolisms for married women, and we're going to start off with the bindi. So the bindi is basically put between our forehead. This is called the bindi, and it's in our Vedas, which was written about 5,000 years ago. It said that this represents our sixth chakra, basically our third eye area, and it represents the soul within us. And whenever we want to concentrate, we kind of press on here and it helps us to focus. These days it's also used as a beauty adornment. So in the olden days, it was more or less of a symbolism for married women, which was the red bindi, which represents prosperity. And so that's why the bride actually wears it. It also has something to do with the Devi, because the Devi also wears the bindi, and the Devi is the goddess. So up next, we'll talk about sindoor. Sindoor is another beauty, not necessarily a beauty adornment, which can be looked at it that way too, but it represents woman's marital status. Basically, it's a red powder. It can also be liquid depending on if it's a chemical, but usually it's made, traditionally, it's made from the sindoori tree, or it can be mixed with lime and turmeric, which, and when you put here, is where the sindoor is put. It also has some health benefits. So basically the sindoor is red, and red again represents the Devi. So a lot of married men call their wives as Devi just to recognize the divinity within her, that she resides a goddess, and she represents a goddess. And it's basically the function of the sindoor is that it can decipher if a woman is approachable or not, and that is why it's used. So up next is the Mangal Sutra, and the Mangal Sutra again is one of the most important symbolisms for married women. It is basically a chain. It has a gold pendant here, and it has black beads on it. Black beads are supposed to wave off all the negative energy, and the gold pendant again signifies the goddess, the Devi basically, Shiva's wife Parvati, who is thought to be in every married woman. And the Mangal Sutra basically solidifies the marital commitment between the husband and the wife, the promises they make. And in a lot of folklore and movies, the Mangal Sutra is basically used as a tool for the wife to pray for her husband's long life, longevity, prosperity. And that is what the Mangal Sutra is for.
Share Films is a division of Share Vancouver LGBTQ Friends Society in British Columbia that creates short and feature-length documentaries on many social issues. Although the pandemic has caused many delays, its latest film, Emergence Out of the Shadows, is now premiering at film festivals. For Caden, Jag, and Amar, awakening to and expressing their sexuality within conservative South Asian families was a lonely and terrifying experience. Heart-wrenching and healing, their distinct coming-out paths offer comfort, compassion, and inspiration to individuals and communities struggling with acceptance. I called up the producer and director to talk about the film and, most importantly, the message that you are not alone.
So I'm sitting here with the director, Vinay Jaridar, but he wants me to speak first. And I'm the producer of the film. I'm also cast in the film as one of the interview subjects. And it's very exciting for this film to come out. It's 2 years in the making. We were delayed 1 year because of the COVID pandemic. The film is really touching. It's emotionally gripping. It's about three people, a gay woman, a gay young man who was disowned for being gay, and myself. And we share our coming out journeys and the reactions of our parents. So it's very unique and it's very insightful because you really rarely get to see the journey that the parents go through in, dealing with people in dealing with their children's sexuality, especially in the South Asian community. You really rarely get to see this. So it's really an eye-opener and it's a really good educational tool.
How did you both come together to create this idea? How was the foundations of it? How did it all come to be?
I've been working with Alex and Cher Vancouver for a while now. I've done a lot of graphic design, movies, film editing, stuff like this for them for a long, long time. So we were at a friend's birthday party and we were discussing, and My Name Was January, Alex's first film, it had done really well. So we were excited. We were talking about that. Obviously, we should do a second one. So we were basically brainstorming on the at the dinner table. And then we said, oh, maybe we should do this. This is something that we should do. And it just, and I was there at the right time. And then he said, okay, you should do it. And then I was there. So I ended up becoming the director and the editor for this film. Yes.
But the main impetus to this whole thing was the young man, Caden's story in the film. He was a young man from Ludhiana, which is a big city in Punjab, India. He was studying at Langara College in Vancouver. He was disowned when his whole family found out he was gay. And he contacted Share Vancouver, our nonprofit, for help. And really, you find out in the story what happens to his young man, where he had no food, no shelter. His immigration status was in limbo. He had no one to turn to for support. What is someone supposed to do in that situation? So you find out in this film what happens, but really, we really wanted to share his story because we don't want other people in our community to suffer like this. And we want to educate the families and the parents so they have a greater understanding. And, this is, it's sad. We just want people to treat people, like with love and with equality and with dignity. And, I'm sure God didn't create all of us so-called queer people because he wants us to suffer. And, we just want everyone to love each other like we're everyone's children. We're all God's children.
Yeah, I think that's one of the struggle, like coming up in a conservative background, it probably has very similar ideological hesitations in terms of the queer community to South Asians. Would you say that's kind of a similar idea?
This film is really about the people in Metro Vancouver, even though we have a very strong Indian connection. The director, Vinay here, who is beside me, he's from Kerala, India, in South India. And Caden, this young man who was disowned, he's from Punjab in the north. And the rest of the cast in the film have roots in Punjab, India. The religion, the Sikh faith, really is indifferent on homosexuality. They make no mention of it. So they really, no one can really use the religious text against us because God, it wasn't an issue for the people who wrote the Guru Granth Sahib or the Sikh holy book. However, the culture is still so much conservative and kind of orthodox, and it's very difficult for a young brown person to come out because people expect you to get married, to have children, to have a family, not to shame the family, to it's a very collective environment. I mean, you come to North America, everyone's about individual rights. We even have a constitution and charter of rights and freedoms, and everyone has all these things. And I'm not saying we have less of a collective culture in this country, but definitely we have more human rights here, I would say.
Yeah, kind of those conversations come up. I think one thing, I was watching the trailer that was mentioned in it, that the conversation around homosexuality doesn't come up really in that part of the world.
Yes, to add to what Alex said previously, it was homosexuality was basically illegal until recently, and it was just struck down by the Indian High Court, the Supreme Court of India. Now, but they still don't have same-sex marital
rights. They don't have full rights for adoption, for same-sex marriage, and
that kind of.
And thing. You know, there's still a lot of discrimination and oppression against people who are publicly out and queer in that country.
Yeah.
But you know, we really shouldn't talk about people in the West talking about what it's like to be queer in India, because, you know, they are making great strides in that country too.
There are
pride parades happening. Transgender people, the third gender there, the Hijra people, they're making progress. They are getting jobs. They're getting on television. They're
getting into politics.
So things are happening. India is a very dynamic place, and you know, they have a very vibrant free press. They have a very vibrant democracy. So a lot of things happening there for our community, and a lot of people making a lot of big strides in that country. So I think, you know, there's a lot of hope for people in that country who are queer.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's part just the exciting news of, you know, the world as a whole, becoming more open to people's individualities and who they are, not confining everyone to a box. Coming back to this new film, what are sort of things you're hoping reaches out to the audience? What sort of message or themes or stories that you're hoping to touch people?
It's just about people loving each other, and that's all that matters, right? Like, you see everybody the same. And take all that biases out, and then the parents are able to accept their children no matter what. And then it's a more friendly society for everybody.
Yeah, there's a line in the film, which is and it says, "Being gay is just another way of loving," and you know, love is love. There's nothing wrong with being gay, and we want to get to that.
Yeah,
to get to that part. To get to that stage in our life where we can normalize the discussion, and you know, a gay child would be celebrated, you know, a lesbian child would be celebrated, a bisexual, a trans person, all this diversity. And someone asked me, "Why are you gay?" And I said, "If you look at nature, you look at creation, you look at the flowers, you look at the animals, you look at anything that happens, human behavior, everything is diverse."
Yeah.
It makes sense that there'd be heterosexual people, homosexual people, bisexual people, transgender people, lesbians. There's even intersexual people and people of other different types of sexual and gender orientations and identities. And it makes sense. Diversity is the miracle of creation. We are all the same, yet we are all different.
Yeah.
It's really quite an amazing paradox, actually, if you think about it.
There was a Bill Nye episode, Bill Nye Saves the World. I don't know if you watched that on Netflix, where they're talking about the whole spectrum of gender identity, sexual identity. Yeah, it's a spectrum of things. Humans, we're just way more complicated than the normal animals. We're not just ones and zeros. We're not binary.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just black and white thinking, right? And the world would really be kind of boring if it didn't have many different colors and many different types of people, and if we were all clones of each other and we all did everything the same, it would be a very sad world, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I know for myself, in my own ideology and mindset, I believe conservatism, it's all about, you know, the status quo, keeping things the same. But if things are always the same, it becomes stagnant and things fall apart. Like, progressive ideology is all about moving forward and developing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they don't call it conservative for no reason. It comes from the word conserve.
So that's
where it comes from, you know, and I think liberals have been fighting conservatives since the beginning of time, you know, fighting for the rights and freedoms of people. And I'm definitely a strong liberal as an artist and a producer and someone who's an out gay man, who's brown. And I think we have to fight for the freedoms. Once you stop fighting, you know, everyone's at risk. We have to stand up for everyone, and we all have to be together.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Tina Chen. I'm a member of the board of directors at the Winnipeg Chinese Cultural and Community Center. I'm also a professor of history, specializing in Chinese history at the University of Manitoba. And I'm thrilled that I can welcome you today to the Winnipeg Chinese Cultural and Community Center down in Chinatown. We have many special items in the cultural center that are really meaningful for us and help us to learn more about the history and culture, both within China and that's significant for Chinese communities who live in different parts of the world. One of the great treasures for us here at the Chinese Cultural Center is the replica of the terracotta warrior and the horse. And the reason that this is so special to us is that first, it was gifted to the community center in 2003 on the 20th anniversary of our establishment. And for us, this really shows us the strength of building relationships with the People's Republic of China, but also with all institutions that help support and with the governments where people have originated from as they came to Canada. And the Terracotta Warriors have an incredibly rich history. They are built in about 200 BC. The Terracotta Warriors are an immense kind of installation. They're an example of sculptural art forms, but really they are also telling us quite a bit about the way that state structures emerged in China. So the Terracotta Warriors, it's about 8,000 warriors, 1,500 chariots, covering an immense space. And they're built by the first emperor of China, Qin Shi Huangdi. When he was only 13, he started to build the mausoleum for his own death. And he believed that in his death, he needed to have an army that would protect him. So surrounding his mausoleum are these great big, armies made out of terracotta. And what we see with this then is the importance and the structure, but also behind this, we learn a lot about the rulership of Qin Shi Huangdi, who is known for establishing a strong state, for centralizing control, and for really establishing China in a kind of as a major civilization at the time. But it's also done as a tyrannical force. There's over 700,000 laborers who are part of this project. And because the emperor wished for it to all stay secret and hidden, well, there are writings about 100 years after Qin Shi Huangdi dies that tell us about his tomb. There is no reference to the warriors. All the workers who worked on this project were interned when the emperor died. And it isn't until 1974 that the Terracotta Warriors are discovered. They're discovered by some local farmers who are digging a well. They come across some pieces, and from there the excavation begins. Today, the Terracotta Warriors are seen as a great kind of symbol, a national treasure in China. They are often exhibited internationally at major museums. And so having a life-size replica is really, symbolic of the origins of Chinese civilization. So I think the Terracotta Warriors for us symbolize international friendships, support for the Chinese community here, but they also are a way to reflect on how do we understand that history when there was created, when it was passed on to us, and how we interact with it today and think about it as something that's meaningful for a cultural center, but also to think about what leaders mean in different contexts as well. So it's a great treasure to have and one that we interact with as a dynamic form.
I'm hoping to get this right. It's Vinay. This was your first time directing, correct?
Yes, this is my first.
What would you say were some of the challenges tackling this film, that's dealing with such an emotional topic?
For me, it is a learning process as well. There was a learning curve. We had certain, when we planned the movie, we had a structure in mind. Like, this is how I will deal with all the stories, because it's very hard to say 3-4 different stories and they all have to come together and be cohesive. So I basically had a structure in mind, like how it will all go, but being a documentary, you cannot really plan on that. And it just happened how it happened. And yeah, I'm happy how it turned out.
So what made you want to take the more documentary approach instead of, maybe going a more stylized aesthetic? I'm just curious about the whole process of how, like, the bits and pieces of it came together to create this full project.
Well, we had an amazing team here, the members of Share Vancouver who volunteered to do this movie. They all have amazing stories to share, and you don't have to stylize it at all. You can listen to their stories. And, like he said, Caden's story, when we first heard it, like, we wanted to do something about that. Like, we wanted to bring awareness on the story, and then hopefully nobody else suffers the same, dilemma as him. And, I secretly hope he'll be accepted someday as he is by his, family, or, that's my prayer.
So what happened was we had these studio interviews, and, then we went out and shot, Caden on the bus. We went We had a group of people going to Whistler and getting some snow scenes, and we made the film really visually appealing because you weren't just dealing with, or the audience wasn't just watching people in a studio talking and having talking heads. We actually sort of demonstrated and showed the audience what is visually happening. And there's some amazing, remarkable scenes in the film, you know, even some reflection going back into the past and recreating that.
The trailer was so captivating for me, and just hearing about these stories. So, I'm excited. How has reception been so far for it?
You know, I have to be honest, Ryan, you know, we applied to TIFF, and I was like hoping we get into TIFF, but apparently I heard afterwards they take a very small percentage of their applicants who apply, and it's very competitive as an international festival, but that's okay. We're not going to become famous overnight at TIFF. That's not a problem. But we got into a Canadian Screen Awards Festival in Toronto, and we're very excited. Then that announcement will be coming soon. We got into one of the oldest queer film festivals in Canada, and you know, you will find out where that's going to be. We got into the largest South Asian film festival in the United States, and that announcement will be coming soon. We also got our world premiere will be in California. I'm not going to tell you what city, but it's a beautiful city in California. And that announcement is coming soon. And there are a few that we can announce. We have the KDOX Film Festival in Vancouver. It's Metro Vancouver's premier social justice documentary film festival. It's connected with the Kwantlen Polytechnic University in Surrey. And they are doing a special screening for National Coming Out Day. And that is on October 11th, 2021. And that's a virtual screening. And people can go and Google that and sign up and watch our film on October 11th. They will get an advance link on October 10th, the night of October 10th, I believe. And they'll have like 24-hour period to watch the film. And then the next day on October 11th, they'll have a question and answer discussion with me and Vinay and some of the cast. So that's very exciting. And then we also have a number of community-based screenings in Metro Vancouver at various universities, Simon Fraser, University of the Fraser Valley. We have it at City Centre Library in Surrey, some high schools, and North Delta Centre for the Arts, which literally is across the street from where I live. And they're going to have the mayor and people there, and it'll be really exciting to have that as well. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, it's incredible just, you know, seeing this grassroots project, you know, get the attention that deserves, especially for like issues like this in terms of acceptance and understanding. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, all we want is people to be able to love who they want to love and, you know, just come together.
It's funny. I studied at the National Screen Institute to be a producer, and that's in Winnipeg. It's a really wonderful, prestigious school. I'm so grateful I got accepted as a 49-year-old social worker, and they took me. And what happens, you know, I said, I want to make films about social impact, social advocacy, and social work. And they said, they looked at everything, and they said, okay, you know what, we'll give you a shot. And so what happened was, you know, we produced the film, and this is really a community grassroots driven project. If you look at the Emergence Film website, emergencefilm.net, and you click on sponsors and supporters, we have over 40 different sponsors and supporters, all these, you know, community-based organizations that gave small donations, medium-sized donations, and it all added up. The total budget of the film was about $200,000. And that may sound like a lot of money, but to make a feature film, it's really not a lot. And what happened was, all the money came from the community, and they all supported us because they believed in the project and the purpose and the movement and the mission and the mandate. And so it's not easy. You know, I was constantly applying for grants, trying to pay all these people. And it was so much work. It was so much work. I'm telling you, Ryan. And, you know, almost every other day I was busy doing grant applications, but we survived and we made it. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to all my sponsors and supporters. I'm so grateful to Vinay. I'm so grateful to everyone. And, you know, I'm proud of this project because not only can it save lives, this film will be here long after we're gone. This film will be here. It could be a lasting legacy for the community. It can be used in high schools and libraries and universities and colleges. I mean, who knows who will broadcast it and show it long after we're long after we're in heaven, hopefully. Hopefully we're not in hell. You never know.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. Like, just in this age of media, we produce content, we put it out there. We're almost immortalizing ourselves, in a sense, creating an echo or reflection of ourselves that can last as long as the internet stays around.
Exactly, it's so true. Everything you do nowadays is almost documented and recorded, and it can be challenging, especially if you're a person who is closeted or not out, or you know, still dealing with your coming out issues and stuff. So there's a lot of sensitive topics and issues we touched on in the film. So, you know, it's sometimes people come out of the closet and then years later they want to sort of go back in the closet, and so that becomes a problem. So you really have to be careful who you select as an interview subject and how you put together the film.
I'm Sonja Lundström. I'm president of the Swedish Cultural Association here in Manitoba, and also on the board of directors of the Scandinavian Center. We're very, very proud of this place. We're celebrating 60 years of the five Nordic countries, that's Finland, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and Iceland, coming together with our clubs and all our differences to all be together as one. We're very proud of this center we've created here, and as we celebrate our 60th year, we're honoring our ancestors who have made this possible. This year, we're making a mural to celebrate that, as well as we're creating a book to tell our history. Well, my family came here in 1930 from Sweden, and I was, of course, born and raised here, but my upbringing, both Swedish and Icelandic, has been very Swedish and Icelandic, Scandinavian, because they brought all those cultural things, beliefs, values with them, and that was a major part of my life. Similarly, many of the people that come to this center have that same deep connection and feeling and passion about our culture and where we came from. This place gives us a place of connecting in that way. We're known for Folklorama. As a result of finding out, creating a book called The Swedes of Canada, The Invisible Immigrants. The Swedes were the people went wherever they were given land, in the rocks, in the woods, in the trees, in the forest, in the mines, and they just assimilated wherever they went. So we have found the Swedes in various parts of Manitoba, Ontario, and instead of expecting them to come here, we go to them. So we're the Swedish party on wheels, I call it. And wherever we go, that same wanting of connection and passion for our culture and to sharing of it has been an integral part of it. Last year we went to Lac Lou, no, year before, but because of COVID. And here's an example of going to Lac Lou, where we had over 200 people come to join us. It was led by our Dala horse. This is a symbol of Sweden. We had a 12-foot Dala horse on wheels with our Scandinavian dancers, our Swedish food. We always have storytelling of the ancestors of the area, adding to this book. We're very proud now that on our webpage we've got several stories of our people as a result of these trips and us choosing now with COVID and celebrating our 60th year to have a record of them on our webpage. The longest history of Swedes in Canada is in Erickson, Manitoba. On June 4th, we're going with our costumes, with our dancers. We found a band up there. We found a place. We're taking the maypole. We're taking our spirit, our love of our culture, our dancing, our singing, and our food. And looking forward to a wonderful, wonderful time on June 4th, 2022. Also, honoring Manitoba 150 asked for nominations, and we nominated the one and only Gunvor Larsson, now 98, and she won the Manitoba 150 Award. So this year we're paying tribute with her famous Gunvor Gems recipes. I'm chairman of the committee for the the Scandinavian Center mural of our heritage again. So we have a committee of six, and together we've raised $40,000, and we're repainting this whole building. It's going to be a wraparound mural around the whole building, bringing in our history, our culture, our way of living. It's a very exciting mural. We're lighting it up. I say it's going to be greater than the Golden Boy. We're very, very proud of it and really excited about it. It's happening this summer. They've already started. And by the world-renowned Charlie Johnson. He's such a famous and outstanding artist. We're so pleased to be able to have him in this city.
Well, yeah, because you're out there, you're telling these painful experiences, you're exposing yourselves, making yourself vulnerable.
Yes, exactly.
What sort of advice would you give people or the next generation of filmmakers coming in to tell these social issue stories like this? What sort of advice would you give them?
It does get better. You know, you are not alone in this world. There are people who will support you, who will love you. You can get married and have kids. It doesn't matter if you're queer. You can, and this film shows that you can get married and have kids, actually. Whether you adopt someone or have your own children or you find a partner, it's possible. And a lot of people don't have that knowledge and education. They think their life is over now and they're never going to get married. They're never going to have a family. They're never going to have children. And, you know, it's an eye-opener. It's really an eye-opener. And the other thing, my other main message is treat, you know, the golden rule, what it says in the Bible, treat people how you want to be treated. You know, I just love that line in the Bible because I just think it's such a universal saying that, like, if the people actually believed that and actually did that, the world would be a wonderful place.
That's a great message. And Vinay, now that you've sat in the director's chair,
yes,
is that something you want to give up, or do you want to continue kind of sitting in that chair?
I actually really enjoyed making this film. It was a lot of work, but I did enjoy it. And I am a graphic designer, illustrator, animator by trade, and this will be another feather in my cap, I guess. I don't mind doing it again. Yeah.
He's also a video editor. He's a very, very strong video editor.
Yeah, I'm really thankful for Alex to be so supportive. Like, he's been so patient with me and after me every single day and, like, yeah, got the work done out of me. So
I have my diva moments. I know how to create incentives for him to get the job done.
Yeah, and it's never a bad idea when you're working in the media industry to experience those different aspects of it, because then it makes you a much more cohesive team. Yes. Once you know what goes into all the different departments.
Yeah, but whatever I've asked for, he supported me with it. Like, I need this scene, I need that scene, I need this for this scene. Like, he would make it happen for me. So I'm really happy. We made a really good team in that.
Coming back, you mentioned all of the different sponsors and people who help support make this project all possible. Alex, would you take that over being, like, we're talking about the budget, $200,000, that's super small when you're looking at these blockbusters coming out in theaters with hundreds of millions of dollars. Do you think grassroots is the way to go?
Share Vancouver is actually pioneering nonprofit film production in the country, I was told. And, you know, there's very few registered charities. We are registered charities now. We have a dual purpose arts and cultural and social service mandate, and film production and film screenings is in our constitution. And, you know, we can actually go out there and get donations and grants and issue a tax deductible receipt now for film production, because we are a registered charity. And we are, you know, there's not many nonprofits and charities like that in Canada that are actually doing this. Everything is for profit. And, you know, as a social activist and as a social worker and someone who believes in social advocacy, I'm not really interested in making commercial films or films for entertainment per se. I'm interested in making films that have impact, that, you know, have a purpose and that have a message and that are going to help people and make a difference in this world. And so, you know, the idea of having a for-profit film production company and doing tax credits and giving away a percentage of your company to investors and all this, I mean, I studied social work for a reason and not business, you know? You know what I mean? It's like, so I'm basically following my passion. I'm making films based on my own terms and my, you know, what I believe in, and we succeeded. Now, this is our second film that we have basically managed to make through a nonprofit, you know, through Share Vancouver. And now that we're a charity, it's a little bit easier to get funding because we can issue a tax deductible receipt and we can also go to charitable foundations and get grants. So I'm hoping that more and more filmmakers and artists and creative people will also follow the nonprofit route, because I really think people who make nonprofit films and social justice films, they really, it's kind of a different path than the commercial films. I mean, not everyone is interested in making a big Bollywood or Hollywood blockbuster, you know. There's, we want to share stories of the real life lived experiences of people, you know, Black people, Indigenous people, people of color, queer people, people whose stories are never heard, people whose voices are never heard. And we want to give opportunities. So many people involved in emergence out of the shadows are either queer people or people of color or South Asian people. I mean, Vinay is an emerging producer. He went to the Vancouver Film School, but 10 years ago, and this is his first film as a feature film. We gave him a chance because I believed in him. And, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of people who are marginalized and, you know, they don't get the opportunities and chances.
It sounds like Share Vancouver is really paving the path for future projects that want to talk on these social issues.
Yeah, we're trying our best. We're trying our best. And I'm hoping we get into some more big time festivals in Canada and around the world, and we can, you know, people would be willing to help us when we make our next film.
Hi, my name is Amin Montazeri, and I'm 23 years old, and for the past decade I've been a musician. So I'm a fifth year student in kinesiology at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, but the fact is everything, or so much of that I've accomplished, has been because of music. Music has been part of my ears since I was growing up in my grandparents' and parents' house. And because of my culture, because of my Iranian or Persian background, it's something that we always grow, it's always in our house and something that we come up with. And when you talk to any Persian or any Iranian, one thing that always comes up is poetry. And it is within that poetry that it also ties to music. So when I was 13, I heard a song by a famous Iranian musician and singer called Shahram Nazeri, and it was by, he was singing one of Rumi's poems. And after that, after that incident or whatever it was, I couldn't stop listening. I couldn't stop remembering the tunes, the melodies, and which is why I picked up the daf. So I played the daf for a year, and percussion just gave me a sense of tempo, rhythm in music, and how to maintain harmony when playing with others. The next year, I heard the tune of the tar by Mohammad Reza Lotfi, and instantly I went back to where I was a year ago, and I just couldn't let this feeling go. So I convinced my mom and my dad, but afterward they got me a tar, and that was almost 9 years ago. And today, so much that I've gone through, accomplished, felt and connected with people has been because of playing the tar, playing the daf, and other instruments. But these two are my specialties, I'd say. Music has become a bridge of self-expression where words and language fails for me. But also, it's become a gateway into meeting other cultures, whether it's Iranian musicians, performing with people from the Latin America, recently worked with some of my best friends, great friends, that are Sikh musicians. So it always exposed me to different cultures. And for me, I never really grew up in Iran for a very long time. So music was how I connected to poetry, how I connected to even nostalgia about Iran, or everything that was concerning the homeland, which I was away from. Music was a way to reclaim that identity. I'd like to tell you about these instruments. So the daf, this is synthetic material, but authentically, it would be fish or goat skin, and the inside of it is composed of all these different chains, and it is the shaking of these chains and how we shake it that creates all these different noises or sounds. So to just show you, you always want to bring your hands like at a 3 and 6 o'clock kind of thing. So this is how it would be. So this is the daf, and to tell you about the tar, which is, this tar has been with me for 3 years, but it's my third one yet. One thing I'd like to mention is the tar, the daf, other instruments, the kamancha. These are indigenous to Iran, but not just Iran specifically, but that region. So if you go to Turkey, Azerbaijan, Armenia, we all have different variations. It might look different, but at the base of it, it will be the same sort of structure of an instrument. And the tar, beautiful instrument. The wood is mulberry, and sometimes even pine trees, but primarily mulberry. Now this one, the skin here is lamb skin. It's not very animal friendly, but I apologize. And then the strings are copper, 6 strings, and all these different, and 28 to 25 frets. Now the thing is, in Iran, music theory is primarily taught with the Italian system of do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do. So when I came here and started playing with musicians that learned like the with the different alphabet, I'd say, it was very interesting because where I grew up and learned was very close, very structured. Now one thing I'd like to mention is that Persian music is very based on improvisation. And what I want to play for you is also based on what I've learned and put together within the style of improv. So thank you.
What is the, of course, promoting the movie, getting excited about it. What are your the hopes moving forward for Share Vancouver?
You know, I have such a wonderful team in Share Vancouver. We have grown so much. We have a core team of almost 30 people, volunteers, staff members, board members, practicum students. And the people come together and it doesn't feel like a job. It's like people coming together because they want to be there and they want to help the organization and they want to be a part of it because they believe in it. It has this feeling wherever I go, people come up to me and they call me Papa Share. I mean, it makes me feel old and everything, but they're like, oh, Papa Share, I heard about you. I heard about you. I want to give you a hug. I'm like, okay, sure. Just don't call me Grandpa Share. You know, so I'm really happy where Share Vancouver is going as a nonprofit. There's really no other queer South Asian nonprofit in the country. There is one South Asian organization that's a nonprofit in Toronto that I believe, but I think they're focused on HIV, and it's called ASAP, Association of South Asian AIDS Prevention. And I think that's the only one. I think we're the only two that sort of work with queer South Asian people. However, one thing I want to say, Ryan, Share Vancouver is not just for queer South Asians. We actually welcome everyone. We welcome friends and allies. We have board members who are Jewish, who are Latino, who are transgender, who are Filipino. We've even had straight board members. We welcome everyone. We are vast majority queer South Asian, but we don't turn anyone away because when we were founded originally as a queer Sikh group in Sikhism, you're not allowed to discriminate. Mm-hmm. Anyone who comes to you, you have to provide for them and support them. We cannot be an exclusive organization. We have to treat everyone as a human being. So really we are practicing what we preach. You know, even though we want to support people in our community, we have opened up the organization to welcome everyone. And we have done that at the highest levels, at the board level.
Environment, because segregation, never works out. You always want people to be together to share those ideas, because when you're exposed to people, that's when you learn people are people. Yeah. And not some scary monster that is told in fairy tales.
And when we were talking about Emergence Out of the Shadows and the plot and the storyline and the structure, I said there's no point just the audience being, you know, South Asian gay and lesbian people. I mean, we don't need to educate them. They already know that we need to love each other. I mean, let's get the parents in the film too and start creating some awareness and education around the parents and make it a broader feature film, because the people that really need the education really is also the families and the parents and the extended family and the broader society. Mm-hmm. So it's a question of, you know, reaching out and doing outreach and having the maximum impact you can have. And that was a strategic decision Vinay and I made, that we include families in this film.
Vinay, what sort of advice would you give to a person that is getting into that director chair for the first time?
I don't know if I'm good enough to say like an advice or something, but
come on, you made a great movie.
For me, basically, like, if you empathize with your subjects and you're willing to learn and listen to what they're saying, you can say a great story any day. So that is my only thing. If you are willing to listen to them, they will say the story themselves. You don't have to do much work.
So this song is Serpentinas, which means serpentines. Yeah, is that the word? And it's about the carnival in Humahuaca, El Carnaval en Humahuaca, which is a very little town village in the northern part of Argentina. And there is this festivity in the summer, in February. It's a party, thousands of people on the street, and music and dancing, and it has a very big charge of, like, a spiritual charge. And it's kind of a big renewal, and it's just an amazing experience. And this song is about that, and about falling in love. So here goes, Serpentina. Ay, 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 mi corazón.
corazón, vasijita de arcilla, chueca y agrietada por los golpes. Cuando al alma le falta comida, ay, recién sabe uno que es pobre. Nos envuelve el sol con serpentinas, huele albahaca fresca y a verano. Calles blancas, nevadas de harina, vestidas de amores encantados. Y mientras te miro en mi pecho el latir se hace grito. Serpentinas, serpentinas son tus brazos, mi cintura se colgaron paso a paso. Resucitando, ay, mi diablito, ya estoy resucitando. Mis estrellas que se habían guardado bajo las mil piedras de mis penas, carnaval las has desenterrado con tus brillitos de lentejuelas. El latir se hace grito. Serpentinas, serpentinas son tus brazos, mi cintura se colgaron paso a paso. Tus espejitos ya me están encandilando, mi diablito, ya estoy resucitando. Ay, mi diablito, ya estoy resucitando. Ay, mi corazón, vasijita de arcilla, mientras te miro en mi pecho el latir se hace grito. Serpentinas, serpentinas son tus brazos, en mi cintura se colgaron paso a paso. Tus espejitos ya me están encandilando, ay, mi diablito, ya estoy resucitando. Ay, mi diablito, ya estoy resucitando. Ay, mi diablito, ya estoy resucitando.
Hello, my name's Neil Allison. I'm president of the German band here at the German Club. And right now we're in kind of a trophy room. A lot of the undergroups. Undergroups are groups under the umbrella of the German Club. The band, which I represent, there's choir, there's dancers, there's football club, there's bowling club, there's hunters group, and it goes on and on. But this is sort of the trophy room with a lot of the stuff that's been collected over the years. The club was formed in 1893, and I've been with the band for 35 years, so it's been a very long time. If the restaurant's busy, this is like an overflow, and typically this room is used on Saturday mornings. The football club comes to watch all the international games here. One of the members of the band I could introduce you is Ozzy Asklin here. Ozzy is our oldest member of the band. He just turned 90. And He's had a storied past, is that the correct word? He's a musician with the Air Command Band, so he's got lots of credentials. So the band, we have a couple of little rooms here for instruments and music, if you want to have a look in this little room here. The drum set and our music and lots of stuff. Then I'll open this up. This is also what we have is a, well, there's a couple tubas in there, of course, but this is like a, what we call a, it's a clothes closet where we've got donated dresses and some spare band uniforms. And so if people come here and they need costume, we got some costumes. During the 70s and 80s, they would have socials here on Friday and Saturday night. It's a pretty big hall. I think it's licensed for about 250 people. So this is where we play it at Folklorama. And pretty good sized hall. Very tall ceiling, so you can get an idea of what the show would look like.
Tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. on 101.5 FM to hear more amazing stories. For more of U Multicultural, visit their website at u-channel.ca for content on diversity and multiculturalism. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk, and have yourself a good one.